and a warm welcome to Sturkers and Radar, brought to you by Ping.
Play your best, you know the rules.
Great to have you all with us. And Radar, you're in Sydney. I'm in the UK and you're in sunny Sydney.
Yep. You're in the UK. I'm up down here in Sydney. It's pretty cloudy, but it's nice to be home seeing family and all that, go on the beach every day. I was at Bondi and Coogee and Clovelly and Bronte today. And my local beach is a place called Cronulla. So I've been doing the rounds. It's nice to be back at the beach and spending some time in the sun. But I'm up there on the 30th of December, because we've got an early start next year with a new event up there in Abu Dhabi, the teams event, which I'm looking forward to. But we'll get into that when we get deeper into the show.
We will indeed. Look, we're going to get straight to it and welcome our very special guest for this month's edition of Sturkers and Radar. Delighted to say, we're a little international today. We're crossing time zones. I'm in the UK, as I said. Radar's in Sydney. And our next guest, delighted to welcome Nicholas Kolsarts, live from Dubai. Nico, great to have you with us.
It's pretty cool to be with you guys. I've done a few of these, and it's always good fun. And I've always had a special relationship with you too, so I'm really looking forward to this.
Aww,
very nice of you to come on the show. One of the nicest guys on tour. There aren't many of us left.
You were definitely part of that club. That's at least I can do. At least I can say.
You look very relaxed there as well, just reclining with a little, reclining on, it looks like you're laying down on a beanbag or something, or you're looking very chilled, Nico.
Well, I just looked at how radar set up, and I thought that I had to go to sit accordingly.
You do. Listen, congrats. Recently announced as one of the new VCs for Team Europe next year. I was chuffed for you. I remember, obviously, we've interviewed you, known you many years on tour, obviously played a starring role in 2012, which we'll come to, but just describe what an honour it was to get the call and to be a part of the European team as a VC for next year.
Well, I mean, it's a massive honour. Whenever you are selected to play team events, even growing up, national team stuff, play for your country, and then, we played a bunch of Sevi trophies back in the day, and then when you get the chance to play for the biggest one that we have in our sport against the US in the Ryder Cup, it's just a massive honor. And it's also a recognition of how good of a player you have become. And now 10 years after getting a call to be involved into being one of the vice captain is, I mean, it's cherry on the cake. It was always the one thing that I wanted to do in life was part of Ryder Cup. I've been really, really fortunate to play one of the best ones, to have really made an impression the time I played, and now being even just considered to be one guy that could be brought into the backroom staff is just amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm buzzing already. I'm so excited. So I can't wait for this thing to start.
When you played Medina, Nick, we all know the miracle of Medina, and you had a great, I think it was the opening match, you shot something silly around Medina. But all I want to know, what was the piss-up like in the locker room on Sunday night?
It was a piss-up deluxe. We're talking as soon as the last match or the result came up, somebody hands you a drink and you're basically drinking all the way back to London the next day.
And Rory didn't show up late for that one.
No, but listen, I mean, I've been to a lot of never-ending parties, but this one is definitely top three.
Oh, good. Very good.
Listen, on that, because I presume you were the instigator, because you... I mean, it's fair to say you've had a colourful life, haven't you? You know, you like a good party. You know how to celebrate. You know how to let your hair down. Is that fair to say? I mean, obviously, you're 40 now. You're a mature man. You're a dad. You've got two kids. But back in the day, I mean, you could party with the best, couldn't you?
I was definitely a scratch partier or below. I have been everywhere in the world. I have been to the best clubs in the world. I've always been into my electronic music and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I've lived, I think, for about 2 years, between 2007, 2008, 2009, I was basically living a rock and roller sort of lifestyle that I always knew I had in me. I just didn't know when he was going to come out. And one day I woke up and I was like, it might be a bit stupid to pass out on what this talent could actually give me in life and in this profession and this sport that we love. So it was a bad time in the end of 2000s to get on the horse and give it a proper run. But I had a lot of fun doing it, and I don't regret it one bit.
Amazing.
Nah, absolutely not. We wouldn't have it any other way, and you wouldn't have it any other way, I'm sure.
Well, no, I think it was in my blood. I mean, I was always attracted to the rather more floral part of life.
That's a lovely description. I was
trying to find something I could actually play on air.
The floral way of life.
I was always attracted. I remember since I was really, really young, I would, you know, whatever it was, music or stories from Studio 54 and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, this would be amazing, you know, to experience. And I did it fully. And I was very fortunate that I could come back from those 2 years, because a lot of people wouldn't have been capable of doing that. And it was also because I realized that, you know, I had a lot of potential. I had something different than most other golfers or players or persons in general. And, you know, like everybody in life, at one stage you look at yourself and you go, okay, who am I? Where am I? Where do I want to go? Do I give it a shot? Yes or no? And I did. And I got, you know, especially rewarded for it.
You did indeed.
But you're a great champion in the respect of when you've been down, you've been down of late with the injuries, but even before you won one of your greatest triumphs is at the French around Paris National. I mean, you know, you can't be a hacker and win around there, Nick. And you know, and going into that, you weren't in your best form, but then to come out and just show such spirit and win, where does that rank for you, that win around Paris National?
I mean, everybody would tell you the same thing. It's always difficult to rank your wins, and you know, when you have a normal guys would have under 6, 7, or 8 wins on tour. There's only a few that have 20, 30. At one stage, you kind of lose track of. I'm pretty sure some of these guys don't even know what they won. But when you're somebody normal, let's say, it's very difficult to rank them because your first one was special. My second one was a massive event of Volvo World Match Play where my parents were there and I've beaten the best in the world. But France was different for various reasons. Number one, like you mentioned, I was on the verge of losing my card. Ooh. And French was the second last event of the year. So I needed to play well. Number two, being Belgian, French-speaking Belgian, I always had a special relationship with France. I burst into the scene in 2003. At the Trophée Lancôme back in the day where I played in the last group on Saturday and Sunday, being just 20 years old. And you know, for a Belgian to play well in France, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a Kiwi plays well in Australia. There's always that thing where you go and play well into a bigger country that kind of always makes fun of you, sort of thing. But I always had a special relationship with France because I grew up watching French television. They were they were my core friends when I got on tour, the Raf Jack or the Havre, or even older than that, like Thomas Levay or Mark Farry. And I always consider them like examples, and they would always give me advice. So I have a strong relationship with French golf, and to win in France. And then number three on a difficult golf course really made it an unbelievable victory.
Nicholas, when we look, just going back to the Ryder Cup credit, because we've got a lot to get through. If you like, your position now as one of the vice captains, the sort of changing of the guard, it's been fascinating to see. And we won't delve into the complexities and the contentious issues regarding LIV and the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. But I just, just take an overall view of European golf right now and the potential European Ryder Cup team and how you see a lot of the kind of elder statesmen have gone to LIV. Kind of still don't know exactly what's happening there, but how do you see the changing of the guard? How do you see the European team looking next year? Because we are kind of in this different phase, this different stage, you'd have to say, for the European Ryder Cup team.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a change of generation. I mean, we've lost, big point scorers in Sergio, Westwood, Poulter, but it's just the way it goes in every sport. I mean, nobody would ever thought that Roger Federer was going to hang up the boots, but everybody does at one stage. But I think that there is a huge amount of younger talent in Europe. I mean, you've got the Danish twins, the Højgaard, you've got Maronk, you've got two French players that are really good, and it's just a natural evolution of things. It's just a matter of, the US went through the same thing about 4, 5, 6 years ago, where it felt like, the Furyks and the Strickers and all that kind of stuff, and I think it's just normal. It's just football is the same thing. I mean, you look at Italy. Who would have thought that Italy would have not played a World Cup? If I told you this 6 years ago, you would have laughed. So it's just a natural, what do you want to call it, natural selection? It's just things that happen. But I think the bollocking that we got last time is actually a good way of starting fresh, trying something different. And who knows, maybe these guys that have gone to live, they were at the end of their Ryder Cup career, is not necessarily a bad thing for us.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, after Whistling Straits, we said, this American team is going to be tough to beat for a long time. And everyone said the same thing. But just the way the European tour, the European team now is starting to take shape, geez, my mind is changing a little. And all the names that you said, Robert McIntyre, these guys, they're going to be tough to beat. In the respect, if they do find themselves on the plane to Rome around a golf course that all the players will know so very well, we've got another Italian Open to go there this year before the Ryder Cup. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. I think the European team, and with the what Luke Donald has done, and he's bringing in some really fine people, not only players, you've all played, but let's forget about that, played well. He's got a good mix of people around him, and I think, not only you guys be great vice captains, but he's going to be a wonderful captain as well. He's going to lead by example. He's going to be, there'll be no messing around with Cool Hand Luke.
I mean, I'm only 2-3 weeks into this, so straight away when I was announced as a vice captain, I get thrown into this WhatsApp group that there is between Luke and the vice captains in Thomas Bjorn and Molinari, and straight away there's like Eduardo that throws all these different stats about everyone think, and then the discussions get rolling, and I'm amazed of how invested and how deep and how low in the rankings and the list of players that could be capable of making this team, Luke is looking. And we are still 9-10 months away from this thing. And there's already questions about what about this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. And then Eduardo goes out and does all these spreadsheets about, what their golfing DNAs is like. And I'm already like, wow, this is going to be super cool to be involved in these discussions, because not only there's the data that's involved, although I'm not really ultra data kind of guy, but all our personalities are different. I mean, Thomas has a huge amount of experience because he's done already a couple of vice captain's jobs and captain a very successful one in Paris. Then you've got Eduardo with, all his data knowledge and his statistics program that is off the charts that he's done for the last, I don't know, many decades. And then you've got me that sits in the middle, which is a bit more an hybrid, old school, grew up old school kind of golf sort of thing. I mean, I kind of sniff, what players are like and what they're good at without looking at the data. So I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see how we can all get together and bring what our DNA as an observer or as a golfer to try to put the best thing on the table possible.
I think the mix of the vice captains, I think it's great. Like, I think you just summed it up perfectly there. I think what you all bring when you all come together, I think it's a really good mix for Luke and for Europe. So I'm excited to see. I mean, I'm going to ask you straight, captain aspirations for you one day. I mean, how big are those aspirations as you sit here right now chatting to us?
Well, I mean, yeah, of course, it's the first thing you think about when you're asking to do a vice. You realize that, this could be the first step into maybe one day, you know, getting the top job. But I've seen what captains have to do. I've seen, you know, the amount of time invested and all that kind of stuff. And I'm actually just quite happy seeing what it like from one step, you know, even closer to that job. I mean, it's not for everyone. And it takes, you know, a year and a half, 2 years of your life almost. It's a huge commitment. It's a huge responsibility because you represent European golf for 2 years. And yeah, who knows? Maybe I will have what it takes and maybe I will absolutely not. I never really considered myself a huge, like a number one front man type thing. You know, I grew up team sports and everything, and I was always quite happy being a little bit further back. For example, I played number one in a singles lineup on a Royal Trophy 1 year, and I absolutely hated it. Because you're leading the other 10 or guys that are behind you, and you open up the course and you have to make a statement. And I absolutely did not like it at all, but I have no problem being sent out in number two or three. So I think that's something in my personality that needs to be looked at or maybe improved in case one day I want to take this to the next step.
That's interesting, really interesting. And it's what staggered me, I think, the last few years, Solheim captain and Ryder Cup captain, is the amount of work involved. Like you said, I mean, it's a full-time, it's full-on job, isn't it? It's all-encompassing. And that has changed. And I know from talking to Paul McGinley a lot about it over the years as well, it's full on. So, well, anyway, look, we'll watch this space. I'm conscious of time a little bit. Nicholas, I do want to talk to you about, obviously you've done interviews and this sort of rare kidney condition that you suffered with at the end of last year. And I just, before we started recording today, I just asked you how you were health-wise, because, you know, you talked about it a lot earlier this year. And I joked with you at the top there, you know, you've kind of led this, you know, amazing life. You had that sort of rock and roll lifestyle for a couple of years. You've had an amazing career. You're a lucky guy. You know, you're in a great position now. You've got two kids, recently announced as a European vice captain, but you had this health scare and it rocked you, and it was awful to read about it. Just talk about how it's changed your perspective on life, basically, and how it's changed you as a person.
The thing that has changed the most is that I don't beat myself up as hard as I used to in the past. Only because you realize that within one short appointment at the doctor's, your life can change. At first, like the first couple of hours and first couple of days, meeting doctors in emergency rooms and still trying to find out what I had, you're like, is this it for me? Like, is this where it ends? And just the thought of it just, you know, sends you somewhere else and changes you. And I can't imagine what it's like to be told that, listen, you have X months, or, you know, this is incurable or something like that. I mean, the psychological headbutt, you know, you go from driving tranquilo, 80 miles an hour on the middle lane to the emergency lane completely stopped and can't fucking move anymore. So it's pretty abrupt, and I'd never been in a hospital in my life as well. The only time I'd been to a hospital was to get my wisdom teeth removed. So it was an environment I absolutely knew nothing of. And thank God that my wife has she graduated epigemology when she was young, and she worked in the pharmaceutical world her first years after graduating, and she knew that environment really well. And I mean, although my English is quite good, when you get hit with something like this and you're meeting doctors that speak a different language than yours, and being in a medical world, a terminology that you have no idea about, was just really overwhelming to me. And her being there has made the situation so much easier to deal with. I don't know how quickly I would have recovered, or if I will ever recover mentally fully from this thing. But she's made a huge difference in the way that I could tackle and handle this situation. If she wasn't there, I don't know what would have happened. So she's been incredible, and without her, I would have really struggled to actually understand what was happening and maybe take bad decisions in the process as well. So I mean, she's been unbelievable.
Yeah, well, what do you expect? She's Australian.
Well, I mean, just to give you an idea, I mean, I've got two of her friends sitting in my living room right now, and the banter level this week has been through the roof, mate. It's been high level Champions League banter stuff, as you can imagine, which is actually played at GGE this morning. I brought it to GGE because they'd never played it. Went straight back home, straight in the fridge, fresh one, straight in the living room 2 minutes after we got home. Standard procedure, really, for you guys.
Well, mate, it's great that you're back and you're healthy and, you know, you're all looking good and, you know, everything's going well for you. That's good. That must have been a tough time.
Yeah, it was difficult, but hey, it's life. You know, you hear stories left and right. You know, you think it only happens to others. And yeah, I mean, we talked about it earlier. I lived a rock and roll lifestyle for X couple of years. I've been a bad boy on the cigarettes for 20 years. And, you know, things do happen. But, you know, that sort of stuff happens for a reason. And you kind of look at yourself and go, okay, let's lay everything flat. So how do we get on our business from now? And you just got to find, you know, a plan B. And it, you know, it's made my relationship with my wife and my family and what I have a whole lot better, because I just realized how lucky I am and how self-centered and maybe egoistical I would have been in the past. And, you know, it somehow made me, I think, a better person. Who knows? Yeah, I think it has.
Right.
Good to hear. Listen, as well, you've done some media stuff, haven't you? I mean, it's great to have you with us on the pod today, but you've done a little bit with Sky. How is that a big part of your sort of future plans, a bit more media work?
Well, I've always had some sort of, I mean, I grew up watching so much sport on TV. And for whatever reason, I was always, you know, commentary conscious, whatever it was. I mean, I grew up watching sport on BBC, you know, back in the 90s. It was the only channel really where I could get my fix of English sport, wherever it was, watching the PG at Wentworth or the World Match Play or the Open or the Masters. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of Belgians my age that know who Steve Ryder is. and what the Masters anthem was like from back in the day. So I always liked, you know, to add something to you know, add a little bit of knowledge. I mean, I'm sure Radar would have, you know, a huge or like so much more stories than I do on this. But I don't know. I mean, the feedback's been good. I really like doing it. I still like to play as long as I can. But I really do enjoy, you know, portraying what's happening and give something to the viewer that he doesn't know and might interest him. And I think the boys in the TV compound and everything's great banter. You know, you know, when you just hang around golfers all the time, so at one stage you just want to have something else. So.
Yeah. But you've cracked it there. Exactly. That's the way to look at it. You know, the person who sits at home on the lounge room, in the lounge room on their sofa, you have to tell them something that they don't already know. And that's, you know, you've got it there. You've just said it there yourself. That's what you strive to do. And that's the right way to go about it.
It's actually more like get the guy's attention. Imagine somebody in his living room. He's got the golf in the background. He's reading something on his phone, and you just say something that gets his attention. Mm-hmm. I think that's how you hook somebody up. And but listen, I really enjoy doing it. I mean, we've bumped into each other a couple of times, whether it was Ryder Cup or the Open and stuff like that. I really enjoyed doing it so far, and it's kind of like a plan B, to be fair. It's just Radar doesn't want me to take his job, but I won't. I think he's still Champions League level. I'm still playing for the under 21s.
All right, I could always sort of get injured.
What, with a body like yours? I don't think so.
He said he didn't want you on the pod, Nicholas, because he said, oh, no, he's too good. I don't want him after. I don't want him doing all this media stuff because he's too good. He's going to start nicking my job. So, you know, but I called the shots and I said, no, we need to get him on. He's really good value.
No, I mean, every time we've had chats with, I mean, Radar's given me advice already, you know, because, you know, and I think that you recognize when somebody's going to be able to understand, you know, the advice that you give him. And I mean, I would give why would I waste my time giving advice to somebody that's not going to get it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I think we have this understanding and we've, you know, right on our almost like each other. And I think that's why, and I appreciate him taking the time to go, you know, this, that, bum, 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 because it paves the way. And I find this is one thing about our sport as well. It goes into the DNA of our sport, you know, just helping out people because it's a pretty complicated sport to begin
that's
with.
What it's about, man. Yeah, that's what it's about.
I think you're doing well with it. Just listening to you, you're without blowing smoke up your arse, you're smart, you're eloquent. You get it, you understand. And you've been there, you've lived it, you've done it. So, you know, I think, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. I think you'll have like you said, maybe there's a lot going on next few years, but I think it'll be a really good career choice for you. So we're looking at the floral commentary, Nick. Looking forward to hearing more floral commentary from you.
Well, you know,
full use again.
I think you've written it down and you're going to use it again. Listen, yeah. I mean, it's also where I come from. You know, yes. I've had, you know, I come from a different culture than you guys. I started traveling in the UK when I was 15, you know, barely speaking English, and I've developed some sort of hybrid English and using words taken from my language and sort of adapting it to something that you guys would relate to. And I think a different voice, a different culture, a different accent, a different way of thinking. And you find that again into the vice captains in this Ryder Cup. I mean, you've got me that sits in the middle, Eduardo, Latin, Italian, and then the big Great Dane from the north, and then Luke. So it's pretty much the same thing.
Definitely. Look, Nicholas, it's been great to have you with us. Thank you so much for being a part of Sturkers and Radar. Hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I've always liked doing these things and even more so with two people that I'm very fond of. And we've not seen you for a long, long while. So it was nice to catch up.
No, I know. Well, I've been off having a baby, so I've been a little busy. But I'll be back on the road. I've missed the last couple of Opens. One, I was suffering really badly with the morning sickness. So, looking forward to catching up with you next year. If I don't see you before, I'll see you at the Ryder Cup, definitely.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely brilliant. I'll see you in a few weeks up there in the Middle East.
Yeah, listen, enjoy your time at home. I know it's healthy for you Aussies to spend a bit of time down there. Always. And go and have a call one at Coogee Pav for me, because that's where
down that way today, yeah.
Coogee Pav is one of the best places in the world on a Saturday afternoon or Sunday sesh.
It's great that way. It's great down that way. But Nick, absolutely wonderful. Thanks for being on our show.
No, my pleasure. Always.
Thanks, Nick. Take care. See you soon.
Ciao.
The dulcet tones of Nicholas Colsart. It's always good value. Great guy, Radar. I know you've always been a big fan.
Yeah, well, when he came out on tour, I've heard so much about him. But I also heard of his partying, antics. He's, you know, readily admits that he went to nightclubs and all that sort of stuff. In the first few years, he wasn't showing what he could do. But then when he knuckled down, we obviously saw what he could do. He was such a long hitter. Sarah, he could hit it so very far. A tall guy, a quite lanky, big levers, and he could just hit the button. Still can. Just hits it so, and he doesn't look like he hits it hard. He's one of those guys that has this grace about him. A wonderful player. He'll be a great vice captain. He's still got plenty of time to play golf as well, because there's another one. He's kept himself fit, so there's still plenty more golf left in him.
I like the way, you know, as a golfer, you can kind of sometimes. You know, you've had a great life. You know how to enjoy yourself. I think it's just that balance, isn't it? You know, and respect though. He said, look, I needed to almost get it out of my system. And I think, you know, but the ability to then say, right, I've done it now. Come on, I don't want to waste this potential. I'm going to get, like he said, back on the horse and get to it. And, you know, we didn't get into the details of that performance at the Ryder Cup, but to see him almost, that was his, you know, starring role in his golfing career to this point. And it was amazing to watch him that week, and all that talent kind of completely came to the fore, and it was just amazing. And I think he'll be a great vice captain. I'm looking forward to it. So no, great to have Colsart on. Listen, yeah, you're back in Sydney. So we're just going to, there's obviously a lot been happening, and I know you're back over at end of the year and then looking forward to a big 23, but this week I'm in studio covering the Hero Challenge. Tiger's just announced he will not be teeing it up. Fortunately, he's got a foot injury, can't walk basically, and it's a big shame because Radio, we haven't seen him since the Open Championship. We've kind of been waiting for him to return. He's supposed to play this week. He's obviously then playing the match, and then he's teeing it up with Charlie and the father and son. And clearly, that's now one of his highlights of the year. So wanting to be fit for that. What did you, reading and listening to his comments, honestly, what do you think about the times we will see Tiger over the next couple of years?
Well, I just don't know now. I mean, I don't think it's, he said it's I can hit all the shots. I just can't walk. It's one of those. And that's an issue. You know, with golf, you have to walk. There has been previous before where they've let players play in buggies. I don't know whether that will happen. We had that a few years back. I don't think they will, but you just never know. Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods. He's great for the game. He's done so much, but it's a worry, isn't it? It's hard to know where he's at. There's so much pain in that foot after the car accident, and it doesn't seem to be the game. It seems to be, looks very, very fit, and I'm sure he's working so very hard. But and it's not that difficult to stand there, you know, 4 hours a day and hit balls if you're standing in the one spot. But when you are walking around the hills of Augusta, now that's a different story, isn't it? So that's what we're going to have to wait. Just wait and see whether he's just taking his own championship off this week, the Hero, just to let it heal a little more. And, you know, the golf course where he's playing with his son, Charlie, is a little flatter. So we shall see. We'll see where he's at when we see him play with his son, Charlie, in a few weeks, whether we see him hobble or if he's limping, because he was limping quite badly, especially around Southern Hills in the PGA Championship where Justin Thomas won. That was pretty awful. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. We just have to – that's all we can do. But right now it doesn't sound great, does it?
It doesn't. And I thought there was a bit of an admission there as well. I mean, like you said, the quote that kind of hit home, I can hit all the shots, but I can't walk. But then he said, you know, my plan is to kind of play the four majors and a couple of others. You know, he's looking at six for the year. But to play the majors, like you said, the hills of Augusta, it's a big ask. It's a big walk. But he also said, you know, that line, there's not much in this leg anymore. It was almost like a bit of an admission. And I think it's, you know, physically, you can't see it really, but you can't see him getting round four rounds on a tough golf course. So, but look,
if you're playing six tournaments a year, how can you compete against these other boys who play 23 tournaments or 25 tournaments in a schedule? They are so much in competition mode, in competition form. It's like Nadal going out and, you know, playing a match five times a year. You can't do that. You can't. I don't care if you are Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus. You can't compete against these people unless you are seriously sharp. And the only way to get sharp, sure, you can practice as much as you like, and you can be sharp on the putting green, but you don't know how sharp you are until you stand on that first tee and the starter gives you a pencil and he gives you a card. And you change cards with Rory McIlroy and off you go, and you have to fill out those little boxes.
Yeah.
And those boxes are small because that's where you put the number in. You can't draw pictures of what you want to put in. But this is about going out and shooting great scores. And Tiger Woods is a great player, still is a great player, has been an amazing player. But I can't see anyone going out and competing against these guys playing six tournaments a year. I can't imagine. Well, I was freaked out when he won his last Masters.
Yeah.
If he won another major, I'd just be gobsmacked, because, unless he plays more golf. Now, will they let him play in a buggy? I don't know. I doubt it. I don't know. But, you know, we need Tiger Woods. Well, the game's in good shape without Tiger. Don't worry. And Tiger will always be around. Tiger's going to be here helping tours of the world. And, you know, he won't disappear, Tiger. It's just that will we see him out there like we did? I'm not so sure now. I doubt it. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. I love Tiger Woods. I'm a big fan. He's a good man. He's a good guy. and I hope I'm wrong, but look, I seriously doubt it.
Yeah, I agree with you. But in typical Tiger fashion, he said, look, there's not much in his leg anymore. Then he was asked about St Andrews, and he's like, I want to go back to St Andrews. I don't just want to say my farewell there. I want to win that. I want to win there again. And it's like typical Tiger, there's that belief and that competitive edge, never, you know, it's right there still. And I think that's the thing. It's the legs, the physicality of it is holding him back. But mentally, he still believes he can go out there and win majors. So, but yeah, I'm with you. I think the body, unfortunately, is just... it's holding him back right now. So we'll see. Look, you made a good point there. You sort of said Tiger's always going to be around. And, you know, we've seen the conversations and how vocal he's been about Liv and the PGA Tour, et cetera. And obviously he's followed up Rory's comments from a few weeks ago talking about Liv Golf. And we won't get massively into this, but just quickly, he's sort of called and said, like Rory did, look, Greg Norman needs to go before we can have these discussions. I think there's been a couple of big players now, Tiger and Rory at the head of things, who've basically said, we all kind of need to sit down and talk. Do you not see that more as a possibility now, that they could all come together? I'm not saying imminently, but I'm saying some big players have put their voices into the ring for kind of a united effort. Do you see that more likely to happen now?
Yeah, I do. I think it has to happen. And that's what I'm really happy about, that we're actually starting to talk about it all. Negotiations are extremely likely, and people are going to sit down. What they've both been vocal about is Greg needs to go, and they've got their reasons for that. But it sounds like, you know, he's getting in the way with his differences with the PGA Tour over the years. Back in the day, he wanted a tour like this to happen, and he thought he had the backing of all the players. And when it came to the 12th hour, the big time, they all pulled and said, no, we're going to stay with the PGA Tour. And Greg has held a grudge, by the sounds of things, for a long time, and they want Greg to go. And if Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods want Greg to go, if I was a betting man, I think Greg will go. I think what we've got is two pretty big heavyweights in there. And look, even, you know, Rory McIlroy's got a big voice in the world of golf.
Yeah.
But Tiger Woods is the voice in the world of golf. You know, they talk about the old cliche, Greg, you know, like players that move the needle in golf, yeah. Like Tiger is the needle.
Oh, brilliant. Well said, Rhoda. Well said. Listen, I know you're excited about the end of our podcast because it means Give Me a Clue Who, and it gives you a chance to try and overtake Sturkers in the stakes. But listen, before we get to that, very quickly, Lydia Ko, I covered the CME Group Tour Championship a couple of weeks ago. She won her 19th LPGA Tour title, her third of the season. She's just moved to world number one. Rhoda, she's 25 years of age. She's been on our screens and in the media, in the front pages, the back pages. She's been, you know, in our minds and our thoughts for 10 years. She's 25. I mean, she's, you know, she's been here since she was 15. It blows my mind. I was so delighted for her to see her get back to world number one and to have the season she's had. She's a class act, isn't she? Just for you, put into perspective what you think Lydia Ko, where she is now in her game and her career and what she's managed to achieve at such a young age.
Well, what she is the greatest wood player that I've ever seen in my life. She's just a phenomenal New Zealander, incredible player, which they had a great year this year, didn't they? Yeah, you know, Ryan Fox had such a great year, a winner. And then they had a winner on the Champions Tour. You've got, but, you know, Lydia's just an incredible player. You know, we've known that for a long, long time. And to end the year on number one is, will that be her last number one? Because I tell you what, next year she's got some unbelievable players. I think Minji Lee next year is going to have an incredible year. Lynn Grant, if we can get this, a ping player, Lynn. If we can get Lynn, who won the LET, she's number one on the LET. And yeah, if we can get her with the vaccination situation to play over there, I think she'll be very hard to beat. I think she'll hit it further than anyone and dominate the game, Lynn. But, you know, me, you know, getting back to Lydia, yeah, just an incredible year for her. She went into the doldrums, Sarah, a few years back. She he was playing badly, wanted to change, went to Ledbetter, then went out of Ledbetter under the guidance of Ledbetter, just quit again and went somewhere else. And now she's back to her very best. It shows you the perseverance that she just persevered with the whole game. And she's a wonderful player, just an incredible talent. She's going to be there for a long time, but how long does she want to do it for? You know, she's done everything. She's going to be a squillionaire by the time she's 30. And she's like, you know, how incredible is she? It's just, but the ladies' game, next year they're playing for so much more money. And we've been saying that on our pod for a while now, and it's great to see it all, you know, bearing fruit that the girls are starting to get what they deserve because they have a wonderful product out there.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And she had a great few years with Foley. And I know he massively, we talked about this on air, he massively helped her with, I think, just the mentality, the mental side of the game, getting her back to playing, to feeling like she was a kid again. I know that sounds crazy, but almost golf became her job, not her passion. And I think she really found the fun in golf again, played with freedom, which has been critical for her this year. And yeah, amazing to see. Actually split with Foley at the end of last month, but we'll still use her as a mentor. So still use him as a mentor. And really chuffed for her. So yeah, glad we got to wax lyrical about Lydia Ko. Okay, Radar, it is time for Give Me a Clue Who. Are you ready?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm ready. I hate this. I hate these games. I really do. But I'm quite good at them.
You are good at them. Right, we've got producer Pete.
Hello.
With the questions. I hope you've got some good ones lined up for us this week.
Yeah, well, Muggsy's passed these on and he said he's made them quite easy this time around. So,
is that because Radar couldn't keep up the pace?
Muggsy's always been full of shit.
So the score as it stands is Sturkers 3.5, Radar 2.5.
That's only because he cheated last time to get within a point.
Yeah, come on, let's go.
So I'll go through the clues. You write down the answer or make a note of the answer, and then we go through them again and you give your answers. So question one. My family aren't the most inventive with names. My brother caddied for me in the early days and now runs my golf management company. I love reading novels, fishing, and hunting.
Oh, dear.
I don't know that, do you?
I've got no idea. Inventive with names is the clue. Inventive with names.
Number two. If I wasn't a professional golfer, I would be running for political office, having once had the chance to play golf with George W. Bush. My drink of choice is vodka and water, and I'm famous for a celebration at an event when drinking is very popular.
Yeah.
You know it?
Yeah, I think I've got that.
Okay.
Right.
Number three. I originally started golf to lose weight, but fell in love with the game when I was 13. I was originally a shot put athlete. I'm a good singer and dream of doing a world tour on a motorbike.
I thought you said it was easier.
Oh, they're ridiculous.
Jesus.
Well, a good singer, a world tour on a motorbike. No idea. Okay.
Number four. I recently announced I am pregnant with my first child. My fiance is the caddy of one of the best golfers in the world.
Right.
You got that?
It's a woman. It's one of two, and I don't know. I've not actually heard the news.
Yeah, okay. I've got it.
Have you got it?
Oh, maybe.
Okay, number five. My middle name is Utaka.
Utaka shit.
And I won the 1986 Baja 1000 while racing for Team Yamaha.
What?
I know this. This is the only
one. Golf. That's not golf related. Don't know.
Okay. Let's start at the very beginning. My family aren't the most inventive with names. My brother caddied for me in the early days and now runs my golf management company. I love reading novels, fishing and hunting. Number one, Radar, who have you got for number one?
Mate, I'm just going to have a stab. Jackie Nicklaus.
Okay. Sturkers?
Hunter Mahan.
It's Davis Love the Third.
That's just difficult, man.
My family aren't the most inventive with names.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
It's easy to know the answer, isn't it, Pete?
Exactly. Number two. If I wasn't a professional golfer, I'd be running for political office. Having once had the chance to play golf with George W. Bush, my drink of choice is vodka and water. I'm famous for a celebration at an event when drinking is very popular. Radar, who have you got?
I've got Harry Higgs.
Sturkers?
Harry Higgs.
Oh, shut up. You aren't taking Harry Higgs. You liar. Don't you ever say it. No way you're having that.
Honestly, did you have that written down, Sturkers?
No.
No.
No, she didn't. All right. No, nothing to Sturkers.
One
to
Radar.
It was Harry Higgs.
Bollocks. Yeah. I knew that.
Good wipes.
Number three.
Well done, Radar.
I originally started golf to lose weight, but fell in love with the game when I was 13. I was originally a shot put athlete. I'm a good singer and dream of doing a world tour on a motorbike. Sturkers, what have you got?
I don't know.
You've got to have a stab. I haven't got it either. I've got.
World tour on a motorbike. I don't know. Beef.
What about the fellow who won the Players, the daddy of golf in Korea? What's his name? He was a weightlifter, wasn't he?
KJ Choi.
Is that your answer?
If that's right, I'm eating lemons.
It's not right. The answer is K.H. Lee.
Oh. These are hard today.
Oh, they're brilliant. Yeah, they're good. They're good questions, though.
Number four. I recently announced I'm pregnant with my first child. My fiancé is the caddy of one of the best golfers in the world. Radar, who have you got for this?
I'm going to go Jessica Corder.
Sturkers?
I don't know. I think... Is it Emily Pedersen?
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
Okay. It's Caroline Masson.
Oh, bollocks.
Was that one of the two you were thinking of, Sturkers? Because you said you had it down to two.
No. I thought it was either Anna Norquist or Emily Pedersen.
Ah, right. Okay. So, coming to the fifth one, and...
Is it 1-0?
Radar's winning this 1-0 at the moment.
Okay.
This is where you might be able to pull it back. Number five, my middle name is Yutaka and I won the 1986 Baja 1000 while racing for Team Yamaha. Radar, what have you got for this?
Nothing. I mean, 1986, Team Yamaha. It's got to be a senior golfer. Jeev Milka Singh.
Okay.
Ooh.
Sturkers, what have you got?
I have Mr. Ricky Fowler.
And that's the point right there.
Yes.
Oh, Ricky. 1986. How old was he on the Yamaha? Three?
Now, I do have a tiebreak question.
Oh.
Wait a second. Ricky Fowler was on a bike in 1986.
Yeah.
He was a child prodigy.
Yeah.
That was his first love. He was a motocross, wasn't he? That was his big thing.
Yeah, but he was 1986 is how many years ago?
Look, don't be a sore loser. It was Ricky Fowler. Let's move on to the tiebreak.
The tiebreak question. Today's guest.
I can feel this going belly up.
Today's guest, Nicholas Coltharts. How many DP World Tour tournaments has he played? And the nearest to the right answer wins.
I'm going to go 200? Am I way out with 200?
Well, is that your guess?
200.
Okay. Radar?
484.
He said that confidently then, like he knew the answer.
How do you know that?
He's got to be very close to 500. He's been out. He was out there when I was playing.
Well, it isn't 484, but it is 436. So that is a point to Radar. So Radar...
All square.
All square at 3.5, 3.5 each.
Wow.
All square. This is a great series.
So you like it now? Give me a clue who.
Yeah, I don't mind this show. You just give me a clue. That was all right. But we're going to get someone else to write the bloody question because they were outrageous.
Can we get easier next month, please?
We've got Ricky Fowler driving around on a Yamaha just out of his mother's womb.
In diapers.
Yeah, I know.
Listen, well done, Radar. I'm impressed. You're fighting back with Give Me A Clue Who. Thank you to you all for listening. It's been another great episode. Big thanks to Nicholas Kolsarts. You've been listening to Sturkers and Radar Uncut, brought to you by Pink.
Yeah, play your best and get some of those new clothes. They are mint.
We'll see you next time.
This has been a Monkey Pants Productions podcast.